Say we're ready.
Good morning and welcome to the Planning Commission meeting of Thursday, March 8th. May we have roll call, please?
Commissioner Wyatt. Commissioner Christie.
Here.
Commissioner Melsko.
Here.
Commissioner Rose.
Here.
Chairperson Rappa.
Here. Will everyone join us in the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we go to public comment, I would like to let everyone know there are agendas and speaker slips in the back of the room to my left. And also, there are staff reports for the items that are on our agenda up here in the front to my left. So if anyone wants more information or if you plan to speak, please fill out a speaker slip. All right, this is a time for public comment. I have one request to speak from Eric Greening. If anyone else wishes to speak on items not on our agenda, this is your opportunity.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. You'll be pleased to know that yesterday the Water Resources Advisory Committee largely endorsed your recommendations on the Los Osos Resource Management System findings and responses relative to water supply. There was some tweaking of the second recommendation, which called for the county to assume lead agency status over the conservation and other efforts to bring the basin into balance. We found the term lead agency confusing, being a CEQA term for responding to a project, and recognized that the area is served by three autonomous water purveyors. Thus, we tweaked the language in our own recommendation to define the county's role as offering its services to help coordinate efforts. I personally dissented on the recommendation relating to imported water, not knowing why not. What resources do or do not observe the town's boundaries? About the retreat, in the past, retreat meetings have not been televised. This is unfortunate. You educate yourselves about very important issues and set important directions. The public is denied their usual opportunity to be educated along with you and to watch decisions being made. Could videotaping of your retreat be covered by your current contract? If not, could you request that the board amend the contract and provide support to allow your retreat to be broadcast? It is a public meeting, and it's not like you have anything to hide. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. I don't have any other speaker slips for public comment, so I will close that section and move on to planning staff updates.
Madam Chair, Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. The only item I have to report is a follow-up on a project that you saw recently, and that was the Stolall Winery in the rural area east of Cambria. There has been an appeal filed of your commission's decision on that project, and it will be scheduled for a board hearing at a later date. We don't know what that date will be, but we'll report back to you at that time. I don't have anything else to report under staff updates at this time, and I'm looking at senior staff in the front row, and they're shaking their heads. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will then move on to our consent agenda.
If you have no speaker slips.
I do not.
I'm ready with a motion.
There's one item I'd just like a little clarification on. That would be item A, the abandonments of the rights-of-way in Los Osos. Is there a member of staff here who could?
Oh, they're fighting for it.
Okay. John Hofschar, planning staff. It looks like we've got two staff here, so we're covered.
Thanks, Mr. Hofschar. This is a recommendation to abandon three of five proposed public rights-of-way in Los Osos. And it is in the coastal zone, and public access is a primary concern in the coastal zone. And so I'm always very hesitant to approve abandonments of public rights of way without gaining assurance that there's going to be no impact to public access or sensitive habitats when we do that. Could you just maybe briefly go over why you're recommending approval of this? My staff is recommending approval of this.
We share your concern on that matter. You'll notice in our analysis we did look at this for coastal access, and we went beyond that and looked at it in terms of neighborhood arterial access, and you'll notice that we picked up a program out of the Estero plan that talked about Petro Road on its way to Montana mm-hmm. de Oro being a potential for a scenic highway. So that led us to the conclusion that those two of the five should not be recommended for abandonment, and we could not find them in conformity with the general plan. Now, there's three other minor pieces which I believe are corners of the original track map. They are interior to the track. They're looked at as being unnecessary for neighborhood circulation and certainly don't conflict with any policy. So our conclusion was really a partial recommendation. We're not going to support anything on Pecho Road, particularly the one where the Diablo Canyon sirens were.
There was a comment from the Parks Department about parks having concerns if tracked 1646 didn't include a Class 1 bike path along Pecho. Did you folks have any response to that?
I believe that there was some confusion in terms of what we routed to them to comment on. If they were looking at the tentative track map, that's fair to bring that up, and that's a very good time to bring it up. At this point, since we're not supporting the same physical area that they're talking about, we didn't feel it that we, you know, we had anything further to add.
So these abandonments will in no way affect our future ability to provide a bike path along Pecho?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's
Thank
correct.
You.
Any other questions? Discussion?
Seeing none, I'll move approval of the consent agenda, noting that the first item, the general plan conformity, the staff recommendation is received and file that the proposed abandonment of sites 3, 4, and 5 are in conformity with the general
planning. The proposed project is located at 6445 Edna Road in the Edna Los Ranchos community. The site is within the residential suburban land use category. And here's an aerial photo of the site. This site plan shows phase one of a two-phase project. Phase one includes the construction of an approximately 5,000 square foot building that would consist of a sanctuary, chapel, entrance area, kitchen, and a couple of offices. Phase one also includes the renovation of existing residence. The residence is approximately 1,500 square feet, and it would be converted into classrooms and a nursery. There would be the construction of a play area and between 80 and 119 parking spaces. This is the site plan for Phase 2. Phase 2 includes the demolition of the existing residence that was converted into offices under Phase 1. It includes the construction of an approximately 2,600 addition to the sanctuary building constructed under Phase 1. And as a result of that addition, that sanctuary chapel building would result in approximately 8,000 square feet total. There would also be the construction of an approximately 2,700 square foot building containing classrooms and office and nursery. Phase two would result in a total of between 111 and 150 parking spaces. When I'm talking about the parking spaces for the two phases, I'm talking in ranges because what we're requiring as a minimum is the minimum number of parking spaces required in the ordinance for churches. The applicant is proposing to work with rideshare in order to reduce the overall parking demand that the project would create. We're hoping that this project is, or the program with rideshare is successful. However, the project is conditioned to conduct a parking review after 2 years of the finaling of phase one to make sure that that program is working and that parking's adequate. If we find that parking isn't adequate, then they would be required to install more parking. Here's a landscape plan of the project, and this would be the final landscape plan for phase two. Floor plans, elevations of the buildings. This is the sanctuary building, and then this is the building with the classrooms in it. Here's a couple site photos. This is the existing residence on the property. The applicant is requesting a couple of modifications. The first is to the fencing and screening requirements. Modifications are allowed to these through the conditional use permit process. The first is that a 3-foot berm. What's required pursuant to the ordinance would be a 6-foot high fence between any parking area and residential land use category. In order to retain the rural character of the site and the vicinity, what they're requesting is to instead install a 3-foot berm with a 3-foot high landscaping strip that would be a minimum of 5 feet wide. On the other property lines, what's required per the ordinance is, again, the 6-foot high fence between any non-residential use and a residential category. For these areas, they're requesting to do a 3-foot landscaping strip on all the other property lines. So what between any parking area and the residential land use category would be the 3-foot high berm and landscaping. That would be in this area and this area down here. The other property lines that are adjacent to the residential category would have a 3-foot wide or a 3-foot high landscaping strip along them to buffer the areas. The other proposed modification is to the signage requirement. Through the ordinance, what's allowed is 100 square feet of total signage for the site, 40 square feet of which could be used for a monument sign. They're requesting to limit this total site signage to 88 square feet, but to allow 2 44 square foot monument signs. And the monument sign would be incorporated into the berm in the front of the property. The sign would be not lit. It would have some painted metal lettering to it. You've received a number of comment letters on the project. A couple of the issues that have been brought up consistently were traffic and noise. There was a traffic study conducted for the project, which was reviewed by both Caltrans and Public Works. The study was found to be adequate and that no improvements along Highway 227 were required. Regarding noise, the project is subject to our noise ordinance, which limits exterior noise levels at the property lines to 70 decibels between...
The presentation?
Sure. I'm waiting for Gene, though.
I can underline it.
You're on.
Yeah, no, I don't have any questions at this time, but I will want some discussion on circulation and other conditions later, but no questions now.
I had one. We have a memo dated March the 7th from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and they're asking for a few other changes to their project, and they're very specific. Do you have that one?
Yes, I do.
And did you have an opinion on those changes or requested changes or...
There's a couple of them that are just clarification in the discussion part of the staff report, and that would be fine. The one with the time extension for phase two to be the year 2020 instead of 2015, staff had recommended 2015 off of the understanding that that was adequate for the applicant. With the time extensions, they could potentially extend that 2015 to 2018, but your commission could consider changing the date to 2020. And then as far as the clarification on page 1-34, that's part of the initial study in the negative declaration. And I think that as long as the staff reports and the required conditions are correct, then that change wouldn't be necessary in the negative declaration.
Okay, so the only real change would be the 2020 in lieu of 2015, and we can look forward to the applicant making a case for that or not.
Correct. Thank you.
What about the applicant's pointing out that they'd like to delete the word paved in relation to their parking spaces on page 1-8, since all the spaces won't be paved? Does staff have a...
Well, we'd need clarification from the applicant on what would be paved. Based on the site plan that they had turned in, 80 spaces were shown as paved. There were some impermeable surfaces shown as kind of overflow parking. So we'd need clarification on...
So we can maybe look at that again after we hear from the applicant?
Correct.
Any other questions for staff? I would then like to open the public hearing on this. We have a number of speaker slips. We do have four from the applicant. So you have four speakers. I would ask that all four or two of you at a time come forward. We normally like to keep our applicant presentations to 10 minutes, but since there's four of you, if you can try not to go over three, and we have an indicator here, would be really appreciated. Orval Osborne, followed by Andy Peace.
Gene, thank you. Good morning, Planning Commissioners. My name is Orval Osborne, and I am the President of the Board of Trustees of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Luis Obispo County. Incidentally, I serve two terms on the Planning Commission for the City of San Luis Obispo, so I know the dedication you're making to public service, and I thank you for that. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to describe our project, which is our dream. The dream is of a church big enough to hold our membership now, and we call this project Building the Dream. The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship has been a part of this community for 50 years. When my family joined in 1992, the church had 140 members, and since that time we've gradually grown to about 240 members. We've outgrown our building on Foothill Boulevard. The church leadership saw the growth over the years, and we made a plan. The congregation voted repeatedly by over 95% to approve our plan to buy and build a new church. Then our site selection committee found this wonderful property on Highway 227, which fit all the criteria. As a former planning commissioner, I know that the zoning is crucial. So I was pleased to read that the residential suburban zoning allows churches. Our property is a stone's throw from the Trinity Church to the south and the IBEW Union Hall to the north of us. Unitarians value peace, justice, and compassion in our relations and living lightly on the land. The architects have designed in accordance with our values by building green. So our fellowship will be good stewards of the land, and we will be good neighbors. Our entire congregation is looking
at the property. We fell in love with the land and the neighborhood, and we knew this would meet our environmental goals. We decided to pursue LEED certification. For those who are unfamiliar with LEED, it's leadership in energy and environmental design, administered through the national nonprofit U.S. Green Building Council. LEED is a third-party certification of green building, looking at sustainable sites, water conservation, energy and atmosphere, materials and resources, and indoor air quality. For us and for the larger community, it is assurance that we will, as Orville said, live lightly on the land. Strategies we are using include passive thermal design to reduce the need for heating and eliminate air conditioning, intentional daylighting that will minimize the use of electricity during the day, a phased restoration of the site to California native landscape, an aggressive rideshare plan to reduce the number of vehicles on site, and selection of materials that do not off-gas. We take our responsibility of stewardship seriously and with great joy. Thank you again for your consideration.
Thank you. Polly Cooper, followed by Tom Norwood.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Polly Cooper. I live near Santa Margarita. I'm an architect from San Luis Obispo Sustainability Group. Can you hear me? I don't know if I can up the ante on this. As you've heard, this thoughtful religious community has pledged its support for a project that's ecologically appropriate. We're delighted to be responsible for both the landscape design and the design of the buildings, and we intend that they will reduce the impacts of this use. Many of the green strategies which we've developed for the project have been described by Andy, but I'd like just to mention a couple of words about the site planning. We did a number of different schemes for the project and evaluated them on a number of criteria, including preservation of the rural character of the site, ensuring ease and safety of circulation, minimizing impervious surfaces, maximizing solar access, minimizing wind and noise. We think that the resulting scheme works well from all these perspectives and are delighted that the building will be going through and the project itself will be going through the evaluation project that Andy mentioned a lead. The landscape design, as she mentioned, is based on California native vegetation as a palette, and I would just like to add that we were happy that the planning process identified four special plants, which in the California Diversity Database described as sensitive vegetation. There's a Brewer's spine flower, a Pismo clarkia, a Slow County lupin, and a Wells manzanita that have been identified as endemic to the area, though not found on this property because it's been used for residential and agricultural use previously. So we intend to add to the palette that we have chosen these four plants and find places on the property so that they can flourish again, because increasing biodiversity is definitely one of the goals of this project. So we look forward to your approval. This should be a trend-setting ecological facility. Thank you.
Before you leave, we did receive written comments asking for some changes to the conditions that are before us. Are you the best to speak about paved?
Yes, I would be happy to clarify right now what the proposal is for phase one. We propose 78 paved parking places and 7 that are not, that are permeable, which would be a total of 85 parking spots. And then for phase two, adding 20 paved spaces and 50 which are not paved, which would be an additional 70, and that would bring up the total to 155.
Okay, and you're using the idea of, quote, paved, and yet I thought that I understood that it was to be a substitute. Maybe I didn't understand that, that there was some type of permeable pavers that would be used?
Well, the exact paving material hasn't been determined, but in terms of this traditional asphalt paving, that's the one that we're calling paved.
Okay.
So I just for some additional clarification, Ms. Cooper, when you say phase one will have 78 paved parking spaces, you are referring to traditional asphalt parking.
As far as we know at this point, there may be something that's gentler, but the conditions on this site make permeable paving more difficult than it could be on places that have good permeability, because you need to drain the water somehow, and if you're letting it go through the surface of the material on which you're parking, and you have to do something below. And this site has like adobe clay, like a lot of sites do in San Luis County. And so it doesn't drain below that. And so there's it's an engineering feat to drain areas that are made out of adobe.
So just while we
have better permeability on the site.
Okay. Maybe you can and Ms. Cooper can get together, because now we've heard 76 paved, 78 paved. We've got 80 paved in the conditions. So maybe you can, while public testimony continues, you guys can come up with some a suggested revision for that condition.
Deal.
Thank you. Tom Norwood, followed by Richard Knight.
I'm Tom Norwood, and I'm from San Luis Obispo. I'm the retired minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Luis Obispo County, and today I'm speaking on behalf of our minister, the Reverend Helen Carroll, who is out of state due to a family emergency. We are a member congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Association, which is headquartered in Boston, Massachusetts. The Reverend Bill Sinkford is our national president, and he recently visited San Luis Obispo in the past 2 weeks to recognize us as a breakthrough congregation based on our programs and our growth within the Unitarian Universalist Association. And it is this growth which has been both good and bad, because it has now raised the need for us to relocate. We bring a religious presence to the Edna area. As a congregation, we are guided by the principles of our association that lift up the worth and the dignity of all peoples, honor all religious traditions, and we honor and respect the environment. I thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you. Richard Knight, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. My name is Richard Knight, and I live in Arroyo Grande, and I'm a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Luis Obispo County. My committee found this parcel, and we fell in love with it when we saw it with the San Miguelito Mountains in the background. And we have a reverence for the land that we love. We will be good neighbors in Edna. As part of that, last winter's storm, there was a large number of trees who fell, and we immediately took care of the problem with the neighbors directly to our north. We have outreach to our neighbors by personally going to their doors, offering to engage in conversation with them, and also to give them an idea of what our plan was. We did this last fall and invited them to a tea to come to see what our plan is. Just recently, in the last few weeks, we personally delivered letters with these plans that you see before you to the neighbors to get their input, and we did have some discussion with some of the neighbors. We are creative and concerned people, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, and we certainly can work out any problems that we might have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Eric Greening, followed by Joseph Rallo. I'm sorry if I mispronounce your name. If you'd come forward, it'd be great. Thank you. Eric?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I'm speaking today as a Unitarian Universalist. And I have to admit, I was initially uncomfortable with the proposal to move here. I'm used to being in a minority anywhere I am, but I discovered, of course, and I've long known, the Unitarian Universalist view of the democratic process, and that is one of our seven principles, respect and observance of the democratic process in our congregation and in the wider world. The Unitarian Universalist version of the democratic process is not about a majority running roughshod over a minority. It's about making sure that the concerns of all are addressed in a way that benefits all. And I quickly found that most of the congregation, in fact, eventually all of the congregation, bought into making amends for the fact that we were moving away from public transit by being the solution for each other. And they asked me to make the initial contact with Lisa Quinn, the county rideshare coordinator. I found out she'd never done a ride-sharing plan for a church before. They'd done employers all over the county, but we were breaking new ground. We're a breakthrough congregation in more than one way. So members of the Social Justice Committee and other interested people in the fellowship sat down with Lisa to revise the format that is used for employers to actually work for religious congregations. We have actually then been we've worked on a blueprint that other religious congregations can use to achieve the same ends. And a lot of religious congregations, not just ourselves, are experiencing growth, are experiencing...
For myself and also several neighbors who have the same concerns that I do, and there were four issues, basically. I've heard a lot today about church growth. And our concern is that as this church grows, there's going to be more and more traffic safety issues I go down Price Canyon every morning, and there are between 1,000 and 2,000 cars an hour that come down Price Canyon, and 99% of them turn left onto Edna Road. And the traffic on Edna goes 50, 60, 65 miles an hour. It's going to be extremely hazardous to make a left turn into the lot or a left turn out of the lot without some kind of traffic control there. Plus, there's a lot of bicycle traffic, particularly on weekends. I've heard a lot of discussions about the green issues here, and I'm, you know, appreciative of the fact that they're concerned about that. But water usage is already an issue in that area because of the vineyards that are growing. The septic system, as we heard before, there's a permeability issue on the soil there. When I put my house in, which is a four-bedroom home, a few years ago, I was required to put in 1,000 linear feet of leach field. And that's 10 rows of 100 feet each, 10 feet apart. I cover 1,000 square feet of my property. Based on the phase two projections, I don't know where there's going to be enough space for leach fields there and how that's going to be able to function properly. And the heavy clay soil is an issue. I had 5.5 feet from the surface of my land till I hit water. I was required to have 5 feet. And so I ended up bringing additional soil in to raise my pad up so that I could have adequate leach. Also, noise pollution is a big concern for my neighbors as well, because some of them live right off of 227. There's already a lot of traffic noise, and the Portuguese Hall down there has many parties, and you can hear those a long distance off. Now, I'm sure the church is going to be a good neighbor in that regard, but it's still, with that many people, that many vehicles going in and out of there, we have some concerns about that. And my concern is that the lot is just not adequate in shape or size to put that kind of a facility in there. I mean, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, no matter how well-intentioned you are regarding the environmental issues. And again, I would hate to hear noise pollution in the form of sirens for rescue vehicles to come pick people that are injured trying to turn in and out of there. And I know people that turn left on that street have people passing them on the shoulder at 60 miles an hour. So it's a very big concern for myself and the neighbors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Andrea Brown, followed by Philip De Silva.
Greetings, Madam Chairman. My name is Andrea Brown, and I live in Los Osos. Many of the UU speakers you've heard so far have been members of the fellowship for some time. By comparison, I'm a relative newcomer. As I was planning to retire as a department head from Cal Poly a few years ago, I was looking for a religious home. I was amazed to find that and much more within the community of the Unitarian Fellowship, and it's this much more that leads me to speak to you this morning. We are a community very concerned about our environment. You've heard about the green issue. We are a community who seeks to build bridges with other groups in the county, as can be seen by those that use our current facilities, such as Girl Scouts. We are a community whose members are very active within many volunteer organizations on the Central Coast, such as Feeding the Homeless at Proud of Care Center, transporting excess food from the local restaurants to the homeless shelter, delivering bread to those who do not have it, working with Red Cross, working with Women's Shelter, working with the Animal Shelter. We are a community of people who seek to promote the quality of life here on the Central Coast by working as volunteers at local museums, the Civic Center, the libraries, the Senior Citizen Center, the PAC, PCPA in Santa Maria, and the Clark Center. Consequently, I believe that the Central Coast, for which you speak, will be better served as the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship grows. And growth cannot take place unless we have a larger facility that we can now that is now available to us in the Edna property.
Thank you very much. Philip, followed by Gina Whitaker.
Good morning. My name is Philip De Silva, and I live at the property at 6425 Edna Road.
Do you have him announced?
With my wife and two sons.
Do you have him announced?
Did you give us your name, please?
Yeah,
I think so.
I did.
I'm sorry.
That's
all right.
We are right next to the property being addressed in this hearing. This property will adversely affect my family in so many ways. The peace, safety, and aesthetics that we moved here for will be gone forever. This project is just too big, requiring too large a sacrifice from all neighbors to be approved. The Los Ranchos Edna-specific plan, from here on I'll call it the LRE plan, states in Section 5, page 1, that the standards in this plan is to preserve significant natural resources, which is fine, provide safety, convenience, and enjoyment for the village residents. None of these are accomplished in this project. Starting with the most widespread concern, traffic. Any project allowing over 100 cars to exit and enter Highway 227 construction. On the site noted, the extra commute to the UUF for the UUF members will be added to emissions in our valley needlessly. And green building technique savings they are promoting will not come close to the wasted emissions or extra minimum 15-mile round trip that each member will be adding to their drive. The sheer gallons of fuel wasted in one Sunday can heat and light that building for a week. Noise. My family's quiet weekends and evenings will be a past memory, replaced by increased traffic during times of less, normally during times of less traffic, voices, music, screaming children from the proposed playgrounds and classrooms. All the reasons the UUF wants to place a facility on this lot are what they're taking away from us. In addition to the aforementioned noise, there is one more significant issue that is not addressed unless I do. The trains that go past our property generate...
Your time is up, sir. Just make a couple quick comments and...
I thought I'd get 10 minutes if...
No, each speaker is allowed 3 minutes.
Well, there's a lot to... Okay, the train noise behind the property will now be reflected off this building back into ours, so I'm going to get hammered between two... situations, the light pollution in the place. Instead of sitting at home at night, I now have lights from buildings flashing into our property. We have drainage issues.
Thank you very much. Gina Whitaker, followed by Terry Evans.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Planning Commission. I am a member of the unit. I am Gina Whitaker from Arroyo Grande, and I am a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Luis Obispo County since the mid-80s, and I currently serve as the chair of the Social Justice Committee. I wish today to address our project, which has been planned to uphold our 7 principles, and each of which addresses a justice issue. One of these justice issues, which we will bring with us to our new Edna home, is the intention to honor the worth and dignity of every person and to give opportunity for all voices to be heard, both in our pulpit and in our church activities and here today. We do appreciate this hearing to hear from everyone, and we will honor both the land and our neighbors in the most holistic way that we can. Please support our project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Terry Evans, followed by Belen Tanner.
My name's Terry Evans. I've been lived on Maxwellton Street just down from this property for 23 years. Going through the analysis here, the environmental analysis, we have several things that are stated to be of little or no significant impact that will impact the place and our community as a whole forever if this project goes in. Change the visual character of our community. The building itself will just automatically change the visual. We'll no longer be a rural community of a group of homes. Generates increases in the ambient noise levels will just be intolerable. I live close to the Trinity Hall. They do a reasonable job of keeping it under control, 1 or 2 nights, maybe a month, which is reasonable. When they put in the tried to do the group meetings at Phyllis Hall out front, they changed the community. The noise levels were intolerable. There's no adequate structure in the county's proposal to deal with this. It's up to the neighbors to complain, to harass, and try to control these things. That in itself is intolerable. It just doesn't happen. Circulation and traffic. For 7 to 8 homes that are proposed across the street from us, they recommended that there be a pull-out lane on the corner on 227 to deal with the traffic of the flow of just 8 additional homes. I can't imagine what 170 or 80 parking places would do just up the street from us. The traffic would be intolerable. It's difficult to get in or out of Maxwellton Street between 7:30 in the morning to 10 o'clock, likewise in the evening, way late in the afternoons. The bicycle traffic, like one of the neighbors said, is huge on the weekends. Change in the quality of groundwater movement. I don't know how that's going to happen. Can we continue to draw from the aquifers, add the sewage in the leach field, and maintain some adequate levels of water? We already have a lot of use out there now. The building as a whole, like I said, just doesn't fit with the community as a whole. Like I said, our neighborhood will be changed forever. We won't be the quiet place that the Unitarian Church wishes to move into, because their facility will change that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Belen Tanner, followed by Peter Kintz.
Hi, I'm Belen Tanner, and I live at 1595 Maxwellton, which is approximately two lots away. And I find it interesting that gentleman stood up and said he contacted the neighbors and provided us with information. We didn't even receive the thing in the mail from the county. So I don't even hear sound from the Edna Winery, which is quite a ways away. And we like to have our windows open and have fresh air. And these people are talking about the land. They seem more concerned about the land than the neighbors. You're going to have the light pollution. You're going to have the noise pollution. I just don't think that they would have come and bought a home next to that facility that they're wanting to build. And the poor people that live directly beside them, their property value is going to decrease. The drainage is going to be an issue because there is very poor drainage, as they pointed out. And I'm not quite sure what else to say other than I just don't think that what they're wanting to do on that property is a good choice for the neighborhood, for our rural environment that we moved out there for. And that's what they like about it, but they're going to really change our neighborhood when we can't have our windows open at night because the music is coming from their facility, or on Sundays. You've got car alarms going off. I know that from the old Edna Antique Store. You've got the chirp when they lock their cars. There's all kinds of noise that they're going to be bringing in. And ride shares, we all know, don't work. So.
Thank you very much. Peter Kintz, followed by Richard Drupal. Peter?
I'm Peter Kersey. I live in the Edna town site. I've been there about 15 years. And I share my neighbor's concerns about the traffic issues. The site where the church will be going in is at the bottom of a small rise, and the road turns away pretty sharply to the left from there. So there's only a small window of time from the time that a car becomes visible to the right if you were exiting, trying to turn north. It's only about 8 seconds from there to the time that the car gets there. And so I have concerns about that as a bicycle commuter. I'm concerned with anything that causes people to try to get around traffic that's slowed up for any reason. And it's pretty regular to see people pull out onto the bike lane without checking very carefully. But to me, the bottom line on this is that this facility, I have a lot of sympathy for the people trying to do this. When I look at this staff report and I see that all that they've gone through to try to get this project off the ground, I have a lot of sympathy and a lot of concern for them. I tend to be a person to think that we should live and let live and try to accommodate other people's needs and interests. But to me, the bottom line is that this facility just does not fit in the character of the neighborhood at all. I think this is made clear by the two modifications to the zoning requirements for the screening and the walls around the parking areas. Say that they want to not put in the normal barriers that would be required to protect residential property next to a facility like this, because those barriers would impede the rural character of the property or something like that. And the fact of the matter is that if the normal protections from this sort of a adjacent land use are inappropriate to the nature and character of the neighborhood, then maybe the whole project is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Richard, followed by Ingrid Pierce.
Good morning. My name's Richard Teufel. I live
220 yards from the proposed project. I've never received notification. I would like to say at the outset, though, the particular church I have great respect for. There is not another church that I would like to have as a neighbor. I have great respect for the tenants of that church, and my objection is it doesn't fit the neighborhood. We have been designated the southern approach to San Luis Obispo. Therefore, we are a, according to planning, we are a village. An 11,000 square foot structure in the midst of a bunch of small, middle class, there's no McMansions out there. This is not country club. These are middle class, small homes. And it's been that way forever. We have had, with this designation, certain restrictions. We are a village, so there's no granny units. There's a hole going fast there, and you're going to make left turns across that. Water. I've been there 31 years. I have chased water. I have abandoned a well, and now I've crammed a submersible pump on top of a windmill bore to get water. So I don't know where the water's coming from for all the landscaping. But primarily I'm worried about the scale. It just doesn't fit in this neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ingrid is the last speaker slip I have. Ingrid?
Thank you, commissioners. I'm Ingrid Piers, a resident of Pismo Beach. And 8 years ago, I wandered into the facility on Foothill Boulevard as the education coordinator for Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. We had been given permission to use the space there. I glanced, after setting up for the training, at a poster on the wall outlining the principles and was captured. You've heard a few of them this morning. And I was so moved by the inherent respect reflected in these principles that I came the following Sunday to check these people out. I am now a part of this respectful and caring congregation who is very interested in being a good neighbor. We reached out three times, once right after purchasing the property when we were beginning to look at plans, once when we had a tea, when we had some better plans in place, and again, most recently, we had our duo who actually found the property in the first place go around to more than 100 neighbors, finding most people not at home. But we have definitely aimed to be good neighbors. I know professionals have spoken to traffic and noise and had their say. I would just like to say that in being in San Luis Obispo for more than 50 years, we've never had a complaint from neighbors who are far closer to us. Our boundaries are much tighter in our current location. We've never had issues with lights. We've never had issues with noise. Most of our noise is contained within the building, and we aim to be good neighbors at Edna, too. We fell in love with it. We don't want to change the character of what's going on out there. I'm not going to say more, but I do want to say that I'm not alone in having this belief and intent, and so I would like those of us who are here just to stand up. They didn't all want to speak, but they all want you to know that they are intending to do the right thing. Can you please stand up? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's the last speaker slip I have. Would the applicant's representative care to finalize comments?
Yes. I'm going to share this with Andy Pease. I'll just make a couple of brief points. Regarding the traffic, first of all, I don't think our project should be held responsible for pre-existing conditions. I think we're all aware that Highway 227 carries a lot of traffic. Our share will be insignificant, as our professional traffic studies demonstrate. Noise, we're a quiet group. Our music is acoustic and classical. Besides Sunday mornings, we have small group meetings, typically less than a dozen people. there during the week. Our neighbors will still enjoy peace and quiet with open windows when we're there. Water, we had a pump test, shows we have plentiful water. Plus, our conservation measures, such as low-flow toilets inside and drought-tolerant landscaping outside, will mean that we will minimize the amount of water. I think it will be easily achieved and insignificant.
Thank you.
I'm Andy Pease. First, I want to clarify about the paving and the parking. Our first choice as far as the wording there would just be to note that we would like an 80 spaces minimum, and then that leaves the permit approval process to determine the mix of paved or unpaved. If that is too vague, I'd like to stick with the minimum that's required by the county to be paved, 74 paved, and then 6 overflow, which would add up to the 80. So either way on that. I do want to thank all of our all of the speakers who came out, and we would love to continue the outreach, talk about specific plantings, berm combinations, hours of operation, all those types of things that are being a part of a neighborhood that we would love to participate in. To clarify some of the issues about septic and drainage, we've already had Westland Engineering do extensive engineering on the site. We did all our soil borings, and so we know it all works. It's tight. I won't say it's not.
The increased trip traffic, vehicle miles traveled to the church. Are you going to be incorporating solar for your energy source?
Yeah, the
can you talk a little bit more about the kind of
About the energy offset, as it were. Yeah, and it's a tremendous consideration. As Eric Greening had mentioned, this is a concern for us. What is our overall energy? You know, what's our footprint? Mm-hmm. And buildings, actually, as far as global warming emissions, buildings account for almost half of the emissions in the United States. It's and I think buildings are getting off. Architects are getting off lightly, and so to take responsibility for that, we will need almost no heating. We'll even, you know, solar radiators, everything. So that fossil fuel will be almost eliminated. No air conditioning, which is, of course, a big suck on most assembly spaces that require air conditioning. And even Congregation Beth David, by the same architect, was able to achieve no air conditioning. So that's a noise consideration and, of course, operational. As the we are doing the feasibility studies for the timing on when we'll be able to put on photovoltaics because it's tied to the prices and this initial capital outlay. But we certainly have the roof, and we're wiring for photovoltaics. So we have an eventual goal of carbon neutral for the building with buying other offsets, et cetera, and then between, very efficient vehicles and minimizing the vehicles, I think we'll be doing quite well.
Does the LEED certification require you to come up with a calculation of how much carbon reduction you're achieving through these building designs?
Some of the points we'll be pursuing are the
I'd just be interested to hear what is it, you know, how many tons of carbon dioxide.
Yeah,
if you have that number, it would be great to know what it is.
I don't think that we have that with us, but we certainly have an energy consultant on the team who is putting together the savings, how far we're surpassing Title 24, for example, and then that does translate to an offset of carbon. And in fact, even in the events that we hold, we do a carbon offset program where, you know, carbonfund.org, and you put a certain amount of money in, and that goes to wind generation and tree plantings and other ways to offset our use.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the good
work you're
doing.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, a couple questions for the Ackerman. They asked that phase two go to 2020, but I never heard anybody talk to that, and understanding that the conditions were changed to I think they now say 2015, and plus you get your extensions, which take you out to possibly 2018. So is that okay with you, or did you still want to change to 2020?
Our concern there is flexibility. Although I would love to be 2015, maybe 2018, our concern is the capital campaign, and just as we have stayed on our Foothill property as long as we possibly can, we really don't want to add on before we need to. So to rush our process I feel like it would we would be all better served by having an extension on that.
So you'd like the timeline to be 2020?
I would like the timeline to be 2020.
2020 plus the whatever extensions you get based on that.
If that works for staff, I would.
Okay. Any other questions of the applicant?
Yes. I just had a question for Ms. Pieser, maybe for Ms. Nieder, about the screening on the side of the property. The proposal calls for the berm and the exception to the usual 6-foot fencing rule. I'm hearing some neighbors kind of question that berming rather than fencing. So could you just speak to that a little more and help me out? I'm not sure that the berm is adequate, that maybe somehow some fencing could act as better screening and help the neighbors a bit.
Well, if this is a question for staff, I would just like to close the public hearing. Unless there, does the applicant care to respond about the berm and the fencing and the changes being requested?
Only to say that I think we felt like we're just trying to serve the neighborhood best. The berm we feel is an adequate height to shield the parking, the lights, if there were any lights at night, and that a fence might feel inappropriate. If neighbors prefer fences, then you know we can have that kind of open meeting and maybe an open forum to develop the landscaping altogether, maybe even have public use of our gardens, that type of thing.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no other speakers, I will close the public hearing portion and bring it back to the commission for discussion.
But just to take off Ms. Wyatt's concern, and staff can correct me, the way I understood berms work is they're somehow better than fences because they make the noise sort of migrate up rather than, you know, bounce and resonate off of a...
So you do feel that this is a better, maybe the berm and landscaping a better solution, in fact, than the fencing?
Correct. I think the fencing maybe if it were... if we weren't trying to take into consideration the character of the area, maybe a 6-foot tall masonry fence would be appropriate, but really in balancing all of the issues, we thought this was a solution.
Okay, before we go to the commissioners whose this project is in, can staff comment on the requested changes to parking and to the 2020 deadline or 2020 timeline? Is that acceptable or not acceptable?
Staff does not have a problem with the extension of the 2020 or the 2015 deadline. That would be fine if your commission wishes to do that. As far as the parking, the minimum ordinance requirement for phase one would be 74 paved parking spaces. The ordinance does require it to be paved. However, your commission could allow a modification to that. For phase two, they would be required to do 9 additional paved parking spaces. Balancing what we've heard from the applicant, and my changes aren't up to date, I was trying to keep up, you could require construction with phase one, 74 paved parking spaces, and then up to 39 permeable parking spaces, and that would be determined as necessary through that parking review. And then for phase 2D, it would be 9 additional paved parking spaces and up to 16 additional permeable parking spaces. And that up to 16 additional permeable would be based on the parking review.
But before we leave that point, we heard the applicant say that for phase one, they were proposing 8 permeable spaces. So why the big difference in numbers, 8 versus 39?
I believe the 8 were something that they were going to provide up front. The up to 39 that we're talking about is should their rideshare program not be as effective as they hope it to be. As they spoke, it's an experimental program. It's the first one. We want to make sure that after it's in place, it is doing what it's intended. If not, we want to have the applicant provide the required spaces on, on site and not have overflow into
the... Okay. I'm just curious, because you said the we require 74 paved spaces, but if the commission wanted to do something differently, we could. We've heard that there's site constraints relative to using permeable surfaces, but obviously there's space for permeable surfaces somewhere on the site. So I'm wondering, our commission has been inching toward a preference for less impermeable surfaces, and it seems like this applicant is probably amenable to that that type of approach. Would staff be all right with us keeping the numbers but just deleting the reference to paving in case the applicant finds a way to configure their parking in such a way that they can provide more permeable and less paved parking spaces?
Yes, your commission could do that. There are some findings that would need to be made to allow that modification, okay. And we can get those for you.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Melsko? No questions?
No.
No, you don't?
No.
Well, we heard traffic, and there was a traffic study, and I read the negative deck and said, no problem. But a lot of the neighbors said there would be a problem with left-hand turns, and you need a right lane, slowing down lane. And so they did a traffic study by some independent group, and you guys reviewed that. Could you comment on that? Are the neighbors all overly concerned, or traffic study just blew it off, or what?
Yeah. Glenn Marshall with County Public Works. No, I'm sure the neighbors have a valid concern. I did speak with Steve Oroz, who wrote the traffic report yesterday. He explained to me the report was based on the hours that were given by the applicant, and I was looking through the material here. The report was required by Caltrans. Highway 227 is actually Caltrans State Highway. I spoke with James Kilmer at Caltrans who 2 days ago, basically, and he was happy with the results of Steve Oro's report. Steve had addressed it completely. The county traffic engineer, Dave Flynn, has also looked at it. And basically to get three traffic engineers agreeing that...
Putting the permeable surfaces may be problematic because of the clay layers, and so evidently they've done some perk testing, and so how are we going to have some neighbor had 1,000 square feet, and I would expect they would be in that ballpark also.
I did not review the septic, and typically Public Works doesn't look at septic issues. Usually it's environmental health. We would look at the drainage and the parking and the pervious parking areas. If from what I heard from here is Westland did a study, and although marginal, it seems to work, but I really can't comment to that. Sorry, I can't.
The suggested condition is that they meet this. Is that correct, staff? Is that correct, Martha?
Correct. And the information that was submitted with the reports was reviewed by our wastewater specialist, and he determined that there was adequate space to accommodate, and he would double-check that through the construction process.
So they arrive with their permits and calculations, and so now the guy does the calculation, and if it doesn't work, are we dead in the water, or do we have to make a different system, or how does that work?
Well, most likely, based on the information in the review that's done so far, most likely it would just be more space they would need to dedicate to it, and that would potentially limit how many parking spaces they could do as permeable. And I think that's why the applicant is requesting some flexibility to do as many permeable spaces as possible, but with the engineering of all of the systems, you know, they need to work it out.
Okay, now water. I read in the environmental document it's going to use 1.54 acre feet per year. How does that compare to like a house? And evidently we could put two houses there since it's zoned residential suburban. As one of the speakers thought it was zoned residential rural. It is, I see by the staff report, it's residential suburban. So that means you could put two houses there. And what does a house use? Slightly less than an acre foot?
trying to rely on our memories of how much water a residence uses. We think maybe perhaps 1 acre foot a year. And I can get that information if I look through my documents. The water information was reviewed by Environmental Health. Because of the nature of the facility and the way that it operates, they are required to do what's called a transient non-community water system. And I know that they have been working with the Environmental Health Division on setting that up and getting all the appropriate documentation. And the applicant may be able to talk a little bit more about what they've done to set up that type of water system.
But the conditions are that they meet that. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
Well, my understanding was, like yours, a house is slightly less than an acre foot. So let's abandon this process and sell a property, and we'll put 2 houses there, and you end up with 2 acre feet
correct.
Per year. And this place is going to use 1.5 acre feet per year. So it's, you know, pretty close to.
Correct.
Okay. Last questions on light pollution. I see you have a condition here that says neither the lamp nor the reflected interior surface visible for adjacent properties. So in other words, you're requiring that the neighbors don't know it's there, light-wise. I mean, it's not going to mess up the night sky.
Correct, and they've also submitted a preliminary light plan, which should be coming up on your screen, which shows how the light will be shielded and directed to stay on the property.
Okay. I'm done.
That's it. Questions down here? Anne?
I just heard some issues of scale that we haven't talked about. Some of the neighbors asked about scale and suggested that the project is out of scale for the neighborhood. So I see that the initial phase one church building, the sanctuary plan, is 5,300 square feet. And then with the phase two addition of 2,600, that looks like almost 8,000 square feet for the main building. So I'm not that familiar with this area. Could you take a guess on the size of neighboring buildings? Maybe 3,000 square feet or 2,000? I'm just curious what the actual scale difference is.
And I would hesitate to guess on the square footage of other buildings in the areas. The actual neighbors could better attest to that. This area, while a couple of years old, give an idea of the structures in the area. So this isn't necessarily the most updated aerial, but it gives an idea of some development patterns.
Well, we did hear some testimony.
Industrial, light industrial complex, I guess it is. It's back behind the winery. If you go back in there, and there's a lot. I mean, so there are. And across the street, you go in, and there's some fairly good-sized properties. I mean, that's from my observation from you know, using that road, that I don't think there are little cottages along there, from my observation.
But continuing the discussion, you know, you get 2.75 acres, and so talking maybe 8,000-9,000 square feet for that 3 acres, I don't see that as grossly out of character. This is not a 35-foot-high building. Am I correct on that?
Correct.
It's so the massing is slow or is less, and then you hide that with some landscaping.
Other questions down here? Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, that was a very good segue. We did just put up on screen the visual analysis. You talked about landscaping, and this is the visual analysis that shows the proposed landscaping.
Before we go to the motion, Madam Chair, I think we've sort of left the paved versus unpaved question out there. I mean,
I thought maybe the motion maker, but you're welcome to comment.
Okay. My suggestion had been to eliminate the reference to paved parking spaces, and so that the applicant can make those determinations on site as appropriate. Staff had responded we'd need to have some findings, and so I'm wondering if staff has some of those findings.
If you want to go that direction, then we would recommend that you add a finding J that states that modification of the parking lot construction standards is justified because the characteristic of the use, religious facility, does not necessitate the need for paving all of the required parking, comma, the space provided is adequate to accommodate parking on site, and no traffic safety problems will result from using permeable surfaces for a portion of the required parking.
Does that meet the approval of my colleagues?
Yes, it does, but it's kind of a slippery slope we're going into. I don't have a problem because a church, if their parking isn't adequate, the congregation is going to complain about it, and the congregation gets to do something about it. So I'm really not worried about that. But we put those standards in there for a reason. If we put in, you know, some other application may not be such good stewards of the land and, you know, doing the right thing as far as parking is. You know, for this case, I don't have a problem.
I agree that the standards are in there for a reason, but my concern is that the standards may be lagging a little bit behind our growing understanding of these things. So,
well, and if you look at this as a phased project, I think that that hopefully we will see, certainly, and I know there are some improved products that are out there that can start to kind of fortify the type of drainage programs that we're hoping to look forward to in the future.
And before we go to a motion, Madam Chair, I just would like to take a moment to really applaud the applicant for pursuing the green building design standards and going for LEED certification, which really is the gold standard today for pursuing sustainable building alternatives. And I think as all of our awareness grows about the problems associated with global warming, that any opportunity we have to make the link between land use patterns, building designs, and appropriate technologies with our land use decisions and actions, I think it's imperative that we do so as decision makers, and I hope other applicants will pursue the LEED certification as well, so that we can all do our part to stop wrecking the place, basically. So thank you very much for pursuing that alternative.
Okay.
Well, if it's soapbox time, I'll jump on.
Oh, we don't need more soapbox.
I recognize that churches, we always seem to get our biggest turnouts for churches, and people really like them or people really don't like them. And I understand that the neighborhood is concerned about having this traffic, but as Mr. Marshall has pointed out, this traffic is going to be 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning as opposed to the 5 o'clock rush hour. And there's always concern, but it's my observation that after the church is in, usually they make pretty darn good neighbors. And there's somebody comment about screaming children. Well, I kind of like screaming children, you know, provided they're not, you know, in trouble or anything, and I don't think they would be. But, you know,
tied to the railroad tracks.
Right. These are happy kids enjoying something out there, and that's good.
And Exhibit B as read into the record by staff.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Okay.
Madam Chair, for clarification, those modifications would be addition of finding J as read into the record, changes to condition 1A, C, and D as on your shown on your screen, and relative to phase two, changing the time from 2015 to 2020, and a change to subsection D, and then also a change to condition 18 as is being shown on your screen right now.
Okay. Further comments? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairperson Rapa?
Yes. The commission will now take a 15-minute break. We will return at...
Madam Chair, you may like to mention there is an appeal period. The staff want to mention that.
This project is appealable to the Board of Supervisors, and staff will clarify the date
That you have 14 days to appeal, and the form is available third floor of the old courthouse.
Okay. We will return at 10:30. Please introduce item number 2.
Item 2 is a hearing to consider a request by Tony Ritter for a vesting tentative tract map 2637 for a cluster subdivision. It is located in the community of San Miguel. The site is in the Salinas River planning area. County file number SUB20030164. Ryan Hostetter is the project manager.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. The project before you is a request for a cluster subdivision of 60 lots in the community of San Miguel at 998 River Road. The cluster subdivision includes two open space lots that are just under 5 acres combined. It includes the associated grading, utilities, improvements, parkways, an improved park for small children, curb gutters and sidewalks, and a proposal for 58 new homes. The project is located on the south side of River Road, just at the intersection of River Road and the Salinas River. It is within the residential single-family land use category. It's surrounded by existing development. It's within the urban services area. The aerial photograph shows the development that surrounds the parcel. The property to the left in the photograph, or to the west, includes mobile homes. And the development will use the western two-thirds of the property while leaving the approximately eastern one-third in open space, which includes the Salinas River corridor area. There's also an existing residence on the property that's proposed to remain. It's remaining in the building envelope, which is allowed on one of the open space parcels. That's the dotted line right there where the existing residence is located. The other outbuildings, barns and sheds, and things of that nature will be removed. Now, I flipped this layout, so north is to the right. We are looking up is west. Just to orient you on the screen, I could make it a little bit bigger by doing that. The lots are laid out in a couple of blocks in the middle. The gray rectangles within the blocks are a proposed shared driveway to orient some of the homes a little bit differently. The block along River Road includes an alleyway to the rear of the homes that are actually fronting River Road. So there's no garage access on River Road. All the homes will have garage access off of that rear alleyway. The hatched area to the bottom of the screen includes all of the open space. These are the proposed home configuration. This photo shows the a portion of what will be lot 27 open space. This is the existing homestead that's proposed to remain on the property. It's behind the trees to the left. The area in front of us, the field in between us and the mobile homes in this picture, is where the proposed subdivision will be developed. Another view of the area where the development will be. And this is the southernmost property line looking west. This is also looking on the, from the southern property line. We're looking north here. The outbuildings, the barns, and sheds will be removed. The barn is an approximate location of where the small park will be located. It'll extend from where that the barn is located, and it will go towards the Salinas River. It's still located on top of the bluff, though. It won't be in the river. Another view looking west from the center of the property. It's a relatively flat site. And this is a view of the bluff. There's some debris that is located on the bluff on the southern end of the property that will have to be removed. Another view of the bluff. This is up by the existing house that will remain, and this will all be in the open space parcel 27. This is a similar location. This is the top of the bluff next to the existing home. With that, staff recommends adoption of the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act and approval of the vesting tentative tract map 2637 based on the findings in Exhibit A and C and the conditions in Exhibit B and D. I'm available for questions.
Questions?
Sure. Verde Street, going to the south, right now it goes nowhere but looks like it's going to connect to future development.
Can you put that up on the screen, maybe?
And then the question is going to be for the fire guy, so he might as well come to the microphone. Mr. Bullard?
Actually, I'm not the fire department in San Diego. I'm here for the next
item. Oh, you're the only guy with fire department expertise here. Or at least you have more than anyone else here. Well, my question is going to be about one-way access. I know many of your projects, you have some requirements that if you're going to have so many homes, there has to be two ways out, and that's in the county. And is that some kind of, do you guys just make that up, or is that some state rule? Or
Clint Bullard with CAL FIRE, County Fire. Once again, I am not here to speak to this project because it's not my jurisdiction. Chief Rollins knows the fire chief within San Miguel CSD, and he would review this project with county staff with the same documents that I would if it were in my jurisdiction, Uniform Fire Code, Public Resources Code, the Building Code.
If I may address
the question.
I could ask him a bunch more questions, but I don't think I'd get anywhere. So,
let's phrase it this way. Does the Uniform Fire Code and the Public Resources Code require two separate entrance and exit points for a subdivision of this nature?
Once again, Clint Bullard with CAL FIRE, County Fire, not assigned with the community of San Miguel.
We won't let him fire you. We'll come to your defense.
I have not reviewed this project, so you're asking me to speak to something that I know nothing about, the specifics of this project. However, the standards in effect for subdivisions, residential subdivisions, dictate access both one-way and secondary based on the size of the parcels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryan,
we won't get anywhere.
County planning staff, the San Miguel Fire has reviewed the project. We have a referral in the package. It's on page 2-56. They've recommended approval subject to conditions, not addressing the one-way entrance. However, this project, Verde Street, will not be dead-end forever. There is a proposal for another subdivision to the south, which will directly connect up to Verde Street. I think Richard Marshall might have some more info on that.
So it's something that's in the mill?
Yes.
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. It's not only that, but it's a function of both the circulation element and the community design plan. The street will go through eventually. But for your comfort in the interim, I just checked on my handy machine here.
Elbow room or some opportunity to enjoy the larger scheme of the property, and evidently the tot lot is one of those things, so maybe you don't have enough room in your backyard to put a swing. So do they have to build a thing, and if so, where is that written? And do they have any benefits to the two open space parcels? I mean, the residents of this, do they have any access to it?
Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. There is a condition for a trail easement that County Parks has reviewed and is also here to address if we have questions. The playground is not a condition of approval. It's on the proposed map, but we can certainly add it also as a condition to clarify.
It would seem that we should, sure. And that we ought to even dictate, and I don't want to, you know, micromanage, but dictate that it's going to have a certain level of improvement.
We all laughed down at this end.
I didn't hurt by that.
I didn't laugh.
Thank you, Ms. Christie. I appreciate that. And then I'm looking at the, actually, I look at your recommendation, which we all appreciate that you having here, and you want us to approve vestive tentative tract map 2637, but you don't mention anything about the CUP. I presume you want us to approve that also.
Yes, the tract map and the conditional use permit together.
And then I went to the CUP, and I was struck by condition 1A is exactly the same as a tract map, but usually it's something different, isn't it? Or am I just...
Maybe? No, no, when you have a conditional use permit whose sole purpose is to authorize a cluster subdivision, then that's all it's authorizing. However, we use the conditional use permit to try and capture a lot of those conditions that run beyond the map, that we usually struggle when you just have a map in front of you. We usually struggle with how to handle those conditions, and we put them on an additional map sheet and things like that. This is a real opportunity to be able to use the conditional use permit, the land use permit, to establish those conditions. And the establishment of the park is a real good place to put that is in that set of conditions. We have a condition that requires that the development has to be consistent with the approved site plan. The approved site plan shows the park. But to absolutely clarify, we should add some language to that condition.
Well, if the rest of the commission would agree, I would support that, including some language to say that we'll have, you know, some level of improvements. I don't want to dictate what they would be, and maybe the applicant might have an opinion on that. Okay, looking at Exhibit B, conditions of approval for the tract map, you got condition 3C and 4. They're the same. Are they just really important? We ought to capture it twice? Or? I think they're the same.
They're repetitive. We can take one of those out.
Okay.
3C. We can take out 3C.
3C or is four. Gone.
3C.
Okay. And then... forget that one till later. And then on condition 51, which under the old thing, I just need that one explained to me. I don't. I'll read it here. Applicants shall file with the Department of Public Works an application requesting apportionment of any unpaid assessments under the Improvement Bond Act of 1915 in compliance with Section 8741. What is that all about?
I'd be happy to help. Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. This is boilerplate language, but you don't see it very often. What it involves is that this property is located within an existing assessment district. As I recall, this one was formed many years ago. It's nearly paid off to provide the basic water service for the community. And so whenever you're subdividing land that has an existing amount assessed to it on its property tax, there's a very ordinary routine procedure we do where we take that parcel's assessment and divide it over the new parcels being created.
Okay. And my last question is, we were given quite a bit of pictures and stuff, elevations showing our houses, and I understand you to say that the application shall be in accordance with the approved map, which is kind of the thing you have on the screen, which says the lots will be divided up this way and the accesses. And I think it's a good idea having these little variation of the front streetscapes. You've got you know, driveway that serves two. You know, I think that's going to break up that. But where do they have to build those houses that they're showing us today?
Ryan Hostetter, from those existing facilities to the individual residences be underground. So if you wanted that underground, that would have to be a special condition specifying that, because it wouldn't necessarily happen.
Okay, because those, you notice those front right on that property, and there, mm-hmm. the access is from the rear. That puts the electric line almost over the house or very close to it.
I'd be interested in what the applicant has to say about that.
Other questions of staff?
Yeah, Ms. Hofstetter, could you go back to the slide that showed the bluff, the river bluff with the debris on it? That looks like kind of an eroding bluff to me. Would that be an accurate description of that?
Yes.
Is the trail going to be located, the trail easement going to be located at the top of that bluff?
You know, in this area, and I'll ask Jan DeLeo with Parks to clarify, I think it's below on this section, and I would ask that Jan DeLeo respond to that.
Jan's here, so she was hoping we wouldn't notice.
I'm Jan DeLeo with Slo County Parks. Ryan, if you could go back to the site plan that shows the parcels and stuff. For my purposes, we'll get you going back and forth here. When we condition these projects, we don't initially go out and determine where the trail would be. And in fact, we just say that we want a 25-foot wide trail corridor and that it meets certain criteria. So we don't know at this point where it would be located, except that it would be in that open space parcel.
Well, does the property line extend below the toe of the bluff?
Yes. If you can see my cursor
yes.
on here, the eroded area is right here where the cursor is, mm-hmm. and it only extends on a small portion of the bluff.
But it looks like the property
open space
line
goes all the way into the center of the
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, and the reason I'm kind of looking at that is because my concern was that if we site the trail easement above the bluff, we might lose the trail easement ultimately through erosion, and I'm wondering if we need to...
Oh, they would never do that.
What, bluffs would never erode?
No, they would never put it there.
Well, and again, what we would do is, at the time that the map gets approved, we would go out and make a determination. For example, there's trees located on site and such that we would want to avoid as well, and so we would look at where a good location for the trail is such that it's not getting washed out all the time. And so our expectation is that it needs to be somewhere in that open space parcel, and that it needs to be located such that we're not removing trees, that we're not washed away in a really good storm, and that we're not spending a lot of money either building it or right. maintaining it.
If it were below the toe of the bluff, would it then be in the riverbed?
Well, and to be honest with you, to some extent, that's where horses are now. And we, the county, own what's called the Wolf property that is in the river. Horses would probably stay down in that area, but we are also thinking that someday we might want to do a similar project to the American River, where we actually maybe put a bicycle path along the river. And San Miguel has expressed an interest in that. In that case, we need to be up higher, and we need to make sure that we're not washing away or removing a lot of debris from time to time.
So then with that kind of long-range vision in mind, which I'm really glad to hear about, would it be advantageous with this project to put some kind of condition in there that would require the applicant to provide retaining structures along that eroding bluff at some point?
Well, I think the way the condition is written, it says, and I have to find it here, I think I have enough leverage. Because it says the trail easement shall be located and configured to avoid existing vegetation, including cottonwoods and willows, and result in a minimal amount of soil disturbance. And you could add language, you know, and long-term maintenance costs. And that should give me enough leverage to work with the applicant to find the location okay. that is appropriate.
Okay.
Since we're up here, Ryan, can you go to the next one that shows the little playground? And credit to Ryan, she sent me all this a long time ago, and when you're sitting in the audience, sometimes you notice things that you don't when you're breezing through these. A suggestion I would make is that with playgrounds or any type of equipment, especially if you're talking about small children, you want to make it as visible to the residences as possible. I would strongly suggest any playground be located up next to the street where there's definitely eyes on. You're putting it down by the river. You're not seeing what the kids are doing, and that sometimes creates problems. Just that you don't know where your child has gone either. You can't see them. A second thing that's really not discussed, and maybe an HOA thing, is that we would want a trail from this subdivision connecting down to the Salinas River Trail, wherever it may be.
Not of Ms. Salinas.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jan. On the front page, there's two open space parcels associated with this subdivision. One of them has an existing home on it. The other is described on page one as a 2.5-acre unbuildable open space lot for the purpose of sale or development. And then further on in the staff report on page 2-3, it's the open space parcel is referenced that it will not be developed. So there's a little discrepancy there. Is it for sale and development, or is it not developable?
The open space parcel is not developable.
Okay.
That for the purpose of sale and or development is actually supposed to belong to the 58 residential lots.
Oh, not to the
yes.
2.5-acre that it referred to before that. Okay. And then I noticed, as in all projects, all subdivisions in San Miguel, there's requirement for Kit Fox habitat mitigation, and there's sort of a suite of choices for the applicant to select from. Just checking in, how's that mitigation bank coming?
Unfortunately, our Kit Fox expert is out of the office today. We keep hearing it's just around the corner, just around the corner, just around the corner, so we keep hoping it's just around the corner.
Okay. And how's the effort going to take another look at the fees that are associated?
As far as I know, we're in ongoing discussions with Department of Fish and Game, and it's really unfortunate our Kit Fox expert isn't here because she would have better answers than me, unfortunately.
Okay. So some news in that direction. I was at a meeting with Mr. Ovid and the new director of Fish and Game. Evidently, we're moved. Could you state that a little better?
Yes, we're...
And I'm encouraged, but I think we're going to get some movement in this direction.
It's a great turn of events for us. Instead of having to go to Yountville as our main place for Department of Fish and Game, we're actually now part of the Fresno office. So we'll actually be closer, have better availability of personnel and staff, which is really great. We've kind of always felt like a stepchild down here. So
Yountville.
Oh, Yountville's way up in the... Yeah, I think they have one person that's there 2 hours in a month or something.
Right.
I want that job.
And the at least our conversations seem to go rather well. The new director, I guess you would call him, was very responsive, and we brought up these Kit Fox issues. I know he had a meeting with Mr. Patterson later in the afternoon, so I presume he had the same.
So hopefully there'll be more ability for Department of Fish and Game staff to participate with county staff to get this off the dime. That is good news indeed. Thank you for that.
Other questions of staff? I have one. There's an existing residence proposed in the open space parcel. Do we have the ability to not allow that existing resident? I believe we do. I think we went through this with the tennis thing.
A building site can be located in the open space parcel if it's approved by you. It's discretionary with the commission.
That's what I thought. Thank you. Okay. No further questions. We'll now open the public hearing. I do have one speaker slip, and that's Russ Thompson, who is the applicant's agent for this project.
Good morning. Russ Thompson from R. Thompson Consulting here. Tony Ritter, the owner, is here today also if you have questions for him. I guess to clear up a few of the questions that were brought up by the commission, the existing building there is the home of Rosemary Netto, the original owner of this property, and the house has been there for, I'm going to estimate at least 50 or 75 years. It was a family home, and that's where she continues to live today. And part of this project is that she will retain Lot 27. The house will stay there, and that will continue to be her residence. She's an elderly woman. The park lot is a tot lot. It will have just playground equipment of the scale, small scale for tot lot purposes only. There won't be any larger activity kind of playground equipment. It would just be scaled for small children. If the commission's desire is to move that the location of that park up closer to the street, Mr. Ritter is acceptable to that if that's the preference. Conditions of approval: the 25-foot public access trail easement that is going to be required through Lot 27 and Lot 60 is not a problem on Lot 60. On Lot 27, it's a little more problematic just because Rosemary Netto is going to retain that parcel, and really the only area that's free of trees or brush or existing vegetation would take that trail right up against her house. And again, being an elderly woman, I'm sure that that wouldn't be a good situation for her. I mean, she would make her a little uncomfortable. And I think the biggest argument against that would be that the county already owns all of the property to the east of Lot 60 and 27. So at least that portion along Lot 27 that trail could be diverted to the east and through county-owned property. It could go through Lot 60, and we'd be open to working out whatever alignment through Lot 60. But going through Lot 27 is going to be a little more problematic. And that's it for our comments. It's been a long process for us. We'd urge your approval today of the project. And again, Mr. Ritter is here if you have any questions for him.
Are there questions of the applicant's representative?
Sure. Lots 21 through 26, which are against Lot 60, I see you didn't have housing styles for those. Could you describe your plan for those?
Those were left intentionally vacant because they're a little larger lots, and they may become bigger homes than what is proposed on the other smaller lots. And so, that gets back to, I think, that Lot 60 where you had a question about who would retain Lot 60, that the owner's preference was he was thinking that maybe one of the people that would purchase and build a house on one of those lots fronting the river may have a horse or livestock or want a 4-H project, and that they would be sold that property, knowing that it's an open space easement and they couldn't build a home on it, but at least they could have ownership of that lot. They'd be responsible for keeping the weeds down, and if they had a livestock desire, that they could own that lot.
But how would that help the residents of the smaller lots? You know, again, the cluster thing is, you know, we're bunch up the people here, but give them some elbow room over there, and we're trying to connect them to a trail system, and maybe they want to go down to the river and catch frogs and stuff.
Yeah, I think the trail system, the granting easements through there for whatever trails that the county on Lot 60, whatever trails the county wants, would be fine. It's just that parcel was never intended as being an active or passive recreation area, you know, over the entire open space. It was going, I mean, that's the way we've brought to this point. I mean, if the commission's desire is for that to be owned in common by the Homeowners Association, maybe Mr. Ritter could address that today. But
Other questions?
Well, I'd wonder how the other commissioners felt about that, because I go back to the Vineyard project in Templeton that was presented with some overall scheme in mind, and then later on it got sold and it never did turn into a vineyard, and somebody put up some fences and other people said, well, that's our open space, and now you've messed us out of our open space. And so the people who bought there had some expectations of that. If they were, at least if that was owned by the homeowners association, they would have some control of that. And I'd wonder how the rest of us felt about that.
I appreciate your bringing it up, because I applaud the small home site, the small lots. I think clustering is a smart move, but I think it is dependent on having some open space provided to these residents, especially with the trail access here, and some control then of the residents to use that space. And
so I'm hearing some, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So does Mr. Ritter want to weigh in on that? Because I think that's where we're going.
Okay.
Before that, I would like to ask one question, and either Mr. Ritter can answer it or you can answer it. You indicated that the existing residence, it was been someone's home for 50 or 75 years. Do you think that the that Mr. Ritter would be interested in some type of a life estate that would remove that upon the house being vacated?
I'll let him address that.
Okay. Question.
Well,
yeah.
Public, private, I'm not pushing for the entire San Luis Obispo County to have the opportunity to go there, but the fact that we're making smaller home sites, mm-hmm. you know, through this cluster process, which really is you're getting allowed to do something, use your land that's completely unusable since it's in the floodplain. So the fact that the residents may move there, little teenage boys want to go down there and shoot their slingshots at whatever, that's a use that, you know, they don't have very big backyards, so they got kind of that big backyard to go play in, you might say. And if it's under the control of the homeowners association, the homeowners association can write whatever rules they want, and if they want to let lot 24 put his horse down there, I guess they could do that. But they, the citizens who own that, would have some say in it, because they're having to put up with a smaller lot, and so they, that's where I'm headed anyway.
I understand what you're saying. Some of the talk that I've heard on that open space area, I believe it was at the first advisory board meeting we went to, and that if you came in, well, the map is down, but if you came into the area where the tot lot is and made that an easement out, they were concerned of motorcycles and everybody else using that trail going down to the river. So we had initially envisioned you have access right there, right just east of the property to that river area. Can we get that map back up there?
I think they're working on it.
Okay.
But failing.
Okay. It's
we're looking for the site map.
The overall.
You got it right there, just to get it up on the.
And now we make it big.
Okay. If you go down River Road, that's County Road, and that's not in the river right there, okay, right where her marker's at. That's outside of the river, and there's room for a path and to get down to the river through there. The people that we had talked to at the advisory board, it was a combined meeting advisory board and CSD, when we had originally that little pathway through the top lot going down, which it's been a couple years, they were concerned about people in the community coming and parking in through the neighborhood and then using that to access the river. So the way we've done this whole project is we go to meetings, they tell us what they want, we design it that way. That's how we've been the whole project long. So that's what you have here is over many, many meetings over the course of 4 years to come up with this.
And I understand exactly where they're coming from, and they're 100% right. They want to keep the general public out of there. Great. You know, but if the lot owner from 24 owns it, or whether the homeowners association, they both have control. Actually, they, in my opinion, if the homeowners association, they have better control of it. If the owner of lot 24 takes it, he might be some motorcycle nut and let all his buddies come down there and do things that the community doesn't want. But if the homeowners association is there, they got that opportunity to police it and to put gates up and chains and locks or whatever they want to do. See where I'm going?
I see where you're going. The thing is that I've got 4 years of background on this project. I'm trying to take in what you're saying, you know, right
and
now.
And I don't want to disagree with what the advisor group said. They don't want the general public down there, and I think they're right.
Mm-hmm. I think the concern was that they, by providing, providing the access, their concern was that is exactly what would happen. Is right. that correct?
That's correct.
Doesn't the public, I guess this is a county council question, doesn't the public have the legal right to access the riverbed? Isn't that fall under prescriptive rights? I mean, waters of the state, you can ride horses in the riverbed. I mean...
Well, if you're doing a subdivision along the riverbed, you're supposed to provide access to the riverbed as part of that subdivision approval. As far as the open space is concerned, typically we have a section in the agreement that prohibits anybody other than the owner of the open space lot from going on it, and it's just required to be kept in an open, unusable area, and then the code provides that it can be used for crop production, rangeland, archaeological, public outdoor recreation, or similar open space use. But basically, the general public cannot go on it, but there are some uses that can take place other than development of it.
But if we heard Ms. DeLeo say that horses are being ridden in the riverbed now, and that's been my experience with the Salinas riverbed, is it's kind of a de facto public trail corridor.
And the suggestion was that that's where you would like to see the access remain?
Yes.
But not River through Road. This subdivision.
Not through right. subdivision. And there is current access off of River Road?
Yes. There's no access. The subdivision, it's one piece of property. It's private property. Nobody's had access through the property. It's fenced off. It's not like people have been using this property to get down to the riverbed. The property doesn't actually end. I mean, the river does come up, but the actual, like right now, if you go out there, I don't believe the waters is in this property at all. Some of those other pictures that she had showed, you know, the color pictures showed where the actual river runs through, and this is on overflow, 100-year storm, 50-year storm.
Which we're seeing more and more of, by the way. Yeah. But I'm just confused because we've just heard county council say the Subdivision Map Act requires us, when doing a subdivision on a river, to provide public access to the river. But you're saying that the advisory council didn't like that idea, and so they scuttled that idea, and now we're talking about just providing access for the residents of the subdivision to the river. And I'm seeking, I mean, I totally agree with Commissioner Rose that open space parcel is more appropriately held by the homeowners association collectively than by any individual homeowner. But I also think that we need to be mindful of our requirement to provide public access to the riverbed as well, whether that takes place at that original location off River Road or somewhere else.
Okay, well, maybe that's a discussion we'll have later. But I did want to, while we had the guy here, Mr. Ritter, you heard the parks talk about it's better for a tot lot to be quite near the road, and I see that you've got it back a little bit. So I'm asking you and staff, can we, like, swap lot 26 and that and kind of move it around to put the tot lot up closer? Is that more feasible? And I guess we need the track map back up there so they can see that. Because Mr. Leo makes out a great point that people would feel more comfortable if their little kids are seen from the road. And they're trying to find
it. Well, if it's a tot lot, do you think they're going to go by themselves?
I had just listened to Mr. Leo, and she's good.
Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. That spot has a little bit more space, and it is located behind the existing Netto residence, and I believe, I can't remember about the existing vegetation, but that residence faces north-south, so there is an entrance to that residence that faces that where the proposed park is.
Well, I'm just wondering, as we go to final the map, is there room to move these things around?
Sure. Yes.
I don't want to micromanage it today. I'm going to laugh at me again.
Well, I think Ms. DeLeo had something to add here. I'd like to hear what it is.
Well, let us finish the public comment,
okay. And
then we'll come back to the questions.
Other
questions?
You're okay with moving the tot lot a little bit forward as long as you can?
Yeah. I just thought we had some square footage thing that we had to do. So that's why it's that square footage.
Right. And I want to support that.
But as far
that.
As actual equipment, moving the actual equipment forward, yeah, I don't have a.
Which maybe means move lot 26 a little bit around. I'm not saying cut out the lot, but just move it around to accommodate that. You're thinking.
I'm thinking.
And your answer is?
where would lot 26 go?
Well,
rather than away.
Well,
I don't want it to go away.
Yeah, I understand you don't want it to go away. We'd just move it around a little bit to get the equipment closer to the road, and maybe they're closer to the to where the lot is now.
I don't know. It's beyond me.
I think also another thing to consider is moving the play equipment up would also bring it a lot closer to the Netto residence, and it would be directly in her front yard as well. So that's another thing to think about.
Well, she didn't sell the place.
She's getting a significant benefit here, I would say. I mean,
are there other questions of Mr. Ritter? I do have one question I asked earlier about some type of a life estate or something that the residents would go away when the occupant is no longer there.
Right, and I asked that very early on because it's easier for me to deal with the county and everybody than to do everything I'm doing and go back and get approval from her.
Correct.
I usually have to do. Constantly. I am the owner of the property, but I have to say it's just something it needs to be considered because it's very, in my opinion, it's outdated. Increased building efficiency rating by 10% above what is required by Title 24. It's going to be difficult. California has one of the most stringent Title 24s right now. All these things that you list, that this thing lists behind that you can do, most of those are already code, so it's not like I can do any of those things to rise 10% above. Dual pane windows went in 1980, I believe. High efficiency home heating, high efficiency lighting. Now, you know, the state of California now to pull a permit, everything's got to be on motion, dimmers, fluorescents. So it's just something I wish that can be kind of taken. It's being added to conditions of approval, and it's going to be difficult.
Your concern is meeting the 10% above.
Right, since we've already raised it. The state's already raised it to a level of...
Okay.
What they're saying there, I think you got to put R19 in the ceilings, put R23.
We do R30 in the ceilings.
R30 then, okay.
That's what we do.
Okay.
It's code.
Any other comments or questions? All right. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to address this issue, this item? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back, and I believe someone over here had a question for Ms. DeLeo. Maybe it can be answered now.
Well, Ms. DeLeo actually wanted to add something, and was curious to hear what she wanted to add. So.
It was all related to moving the top lot, and did we have the flexibility in the map to do that? At that point, she had an idea. I could see that.
Actually, I didn't. This is Jan DeLeo with Slow County Parks. No, I just wanted to reiterate is typically when you provide recreation facilities, even if it's for younger children, older children sometimes use them too, and you always want to provide them with eyes on, and that's why the recommendation to move it closer to the street.
So, Ms. Hostetter, can we, without designing it today, with what here, can we move it around a little bit to achieve that?
Sure.
I'd actually like to explore the possibility of having Lot 26 go away to accommodate a larger public play area. And the reason I'd like to explore that is not only for the reasons that Ms. DeLeo brought up about bringing it in closer to the residences, but just my overall reaction to the design here is like some other cluster subdivisions that we've seen, is that the design basically maximizes lot coverage while and maximizes number of lots while minimizing the open space amenities that are supposed to be the offset for the significant benefit of allowing additional building sites. Now, I know that there's, you know, a couple acres of open space in the river, but it's in the riverbed. I mean, there's no way any kind of subdivision of any type could have gotten, you know, parcels or structures in the majority of the area that's being considered as open space. And so, you know, once again, we see the public benefit piece of this balance getting the short shrift.
Saving some time here, I think he submitted a 60 parcel map, and if we want to make it a 59, we don't have that authority. Am I right there, Mr. Orton?
Well, you have to approve, conditionally approve, or disapprove the map that he gave to you. You can't require that it be changed.
Right. And so...
So if we disapprove the map, but we give some reasons for why we're doing so, it might generate some discussion about a redesign, basically a continuance for the purposes of redesign.
I wouldn't support that. I don't know if anyone else does.
Well, that it's sort. I have a hunch that's what. I mean, I'm not going to speak for Commissioner Rappa, but her idea of getting a life estate on the house, which doesn't appear to be an option. I got the sense that was coming from a concern that there was not enough public benefit associated with this subdivision. So this might be another way to get at that same concern.
That wasn't really my concern. My concern was I continue to be a little apprehensive to approve open spaces that actually have buildings and things that will remain.
I agree.
It doesn't sound as if...
I would just read from the ordinance. It says a cluster division shall include at least one open space parcel. Such parcel may be used for one of the allowable residential uses, provided the building site does not exceed 6,000 square feet. And then it's discretionary with you to approve initial use permit that permits that.
I
are you happy with this?
Yeah, it's fine. I guess the problem I'm having is that either I'm not understanding. We're told that the footprints of the buildings are established in the map. I don't then understand how the footprint for the play area is not established in the map.
Staff would recommend actually making some changes to condition. Let me find it again.
Oops. And I guess the other part that I would share with my fellow commissioners and see what they're about. We have access down or wherever to the play area, but I do think there is an opportunity to provide access to what will hopefully become someday the Salinas River Trail. And I say that because I think it is much better to do it now than somebody to come back later and one of these 21 through 26 lots is all of a sudden required to put a trail next to their house.
Staff would agree, and we actually have language that we can show you for that, too. This is the language we would propose dealing with the park area and tot lot. It's part of Exhibit D, which is on your page 231. And what it would do is it would go on to state that the park area and tot lot constructed prior to final inspection of the 24th residence, that's halfway through the tract, and that it would include small-scale play equipment and open area, and that the location of the play equipment shall be reviewed and approved by the Department of Planning and Building and County Parks. That would give us the flexibility. The language on the connecting easement would be on as part of Exhibit B, and it would be new language added to 3E, which is the discussion of the trail easement, that would say, and a connecting easement to the trail location. So you would get it now with this map.
Okay. But not this, not the precise location.
Well, right, that
location
would be determined.
Well, and that's what we did with the update to the park and rec element, was we consistently repeated that language as we went through it, I believe.
Okay, and I would like the homeowners association to have control over that one open space parcel, and I saw a couple other heads nodding, so how can we make that happen?
Well, especially if there's going to be a trail going through it. Mm-hmm.
Condition 39 is the condition that deals with the open space.
Okay, and this is in B or D.
I was just going to try and find that for you. I think it's in B, and it should be on your page 218. And this is the way we stand write this condition normally, which offers kind of the three different ways you can hold an open space easement. So if your commission were wanting the open space easement to be held by the homeowners association, then you would modify that condition.
Which condition are we talking about, Cammie?
39 for Exhibit B is in,
yes,
Bravo.
39 on your revised conditions.
Oh, and the revised.
I think it was 38 on the original set.
So if we were preferring to go the homeowners association route, we would just delete the reference to the other options.
Right.
Just delete the others.
So the sentence would end in common by the homeowners association.
Mm-hmm. We've crossed out, crossed out one of the following ways.
Okay, so we.
I would have one more question, Commissioner Rose. Rose.
Oh, I'm sorry, before we leave that, the other option was transferred to a public trustee conservancy.
You're not on the...
We don't want to do that?
We can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. the other option was to be that lot could be transferred to a public trustee conservancy agency. That would also accomplish the same goal. I don't know if we want to leave that as an option or not. I don't see it's a bad thing to leave it as an option.
No,
if the land conservancy...
Come up quite a bit. Some of the things that are mentioned in this list comes from the Air Pollution Control District. And some of the things that are mentioned in here have already been put into Title 24. The applicant mentioned the use of not incandescent lights, but fluorescent lights and mm-hmm. things like that. But we do keep it as a condition, partly because the APCD wants us to, and partly because we do honestly believe you can still go above and beyond Title 24.
For instance, you could take advantage of the state and federal subsidies to put photovoltaic panels on your
exactly.
roofs. And
well,
or
that,
you
but
can
the, that realistically, these are probably going to be an opportunity for workforce housing or moderate housing. I mean, I just would remind everyone that some of these, quote, subsidy programs still don't work
and,
for people.
And there are localities and jurisdictions out there that are doing a lot of really innovative stuff regarding solarizing affordable housing. Just because it's affordable doesn't mean it can't be energy efficient.
Okay, so we've got a consensus to leave the 10% in there because staff says they can make it happen.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm clearing everything except Exhibit D, you had that up, and before I wrote it down, that's where we added the tot lot building and moving the... slowly.
So this would be new language added to condition 2 as part of exhibit D, which is your conditional use permit conditions.
So we're going to add an A. Okay, and that gives you the flexibility to move the thing to the right location.
Yep.
Still keeping the same number of lots. We may have to move it around a little bit, but we'll get there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, with all that...
I've got one more question for County Council. With the requirement that subdivisions on a river need to provide public access to the river, I don't see that we've met that standard here. So does County Council want to weigh in on that?
Let me read the language, and maybe it's maybe a little bit broader than what I had indicated. No local agency shall approve either tentative or final map of any proposed subdivision to be located upon a public waterway, river, or stream, which does not provide or have available reasonable public access by fee or easement from a public highway to that portion of the bank of the river or stream lined within the proposed subdivision.
Mm-hmm. We aren't actually dealing with a public highway here.
Sure we are, River Road.
So I don't know whether there's access to the river along that road that's reasonable that would meet the requirements here.
We had testimony that indicated there was. Staff might want to.
I didn't hear that testimony. I heard testimony
I
that it was private property and people hadn't been accessing it. So,
well,
where is the river access, the public river access?
I think you get off of River Road right now. Mr. Leo's
coming. By what means?
Jumping off the bridge.
Yeah. Ryan, can you put the aerial up? Just for clarification, we have river access off of 15th Street, which is north of North River Road, by south of People's Self-Help Housing. So that's up a little bit ways. We have a staging area there where you can get down to the river.
How far away is that, Jen?
Well, it's a block, about, and however long a block is, they probably vary. And maybe we can show up a vicinity map in a second. We do have some access from North River Road, but I would also expect that in looking for the trail corridor that's going to run along the two open space properties, we would potentially improve that access going through those open space. So
there.
We would... potentially have access in two places. We would have access through this subdivision for primarily the people that live in that subdivision, and we would potentially have some access off of River Road. One of the
things... that some access off River Road, what are you referring to? The access way by People's Self-Help Housing or some other access?
No, I off of where Ryan has a little pointer. She just shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that is part of the Wolf property, and we probably could provide some access from there, but it would join up with the trail that would then run through the subdivision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is county-owned property here just to the north?
Yes, that's the Wolf property
east?
That we purchased.
Okay,
so that's going to work quite well then.
Right, and in evaluating the trail corridor through this property, we would see how it worked best. And if, for example, there was erosion concerns off of...
division.
Connect down.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the little boys with their slingshots.
Does this adequately cover maintenance then for that? I'm a little unclear. Ms. DeLeo talked a bit about maintenance and whether the homeowners would pay some maintenance for...
I'm Jen DeLeo with County Parks again. I think what we were talking about when I mentioned maintenance was design, and that when on the trail condition, which I naturally didn't bring with me, it says that it location of the trail shall not result in numerous trees removed or whatever. And one of the criteria we could add is exceptional maintenance costs or something like that. But in terms of maintenance, at the point that we accept it, County Parks would maintain it. We don't require participation from the HOA or...
Okay, are we ready for
sure.
a motion now?
I'll move that we adopt the negative declarations according to the applicable provisions of CEQA and the Public Resources Code and approve vest the tentative tract map 2637 and the conditional use permit based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and C and the conditions listed in Exhibit B and D. And the Exhibit B I'm talking about is the one that was handed out. And summarizing the changes, one on on Exhibit A, finding F, which now talks about adequately can support 41 primary and secondary dwellings. I'm suggesting 59 primary dwellings. Thanks. We don't want to leave this in here, do we? Exhibit A, start at the beginning. You're way in the wrong direction. Exhibit A, way in the front. Still in C. There we go. Stop. You were there. Did you stop moving that darn thing? F. The site is physically suitable for the proposed density of the development proposed because the site can adequately support. Okay, that's changed. The other one is going to Exhibit B, as in Bravo. We deleted 3C. We added some language to 3E about the connecting easement. And we revised Condition 39, so that the open space would be owned by the Homeowners Association.
Or a public entity.
Or a public entity, correct. I'm using the language that staff had up on the screen, okay? And Exhibit D, as in Delta, we change Condition 2 to add the A. And I think that's all we did.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Further discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, I would like to speak briefly to the motion. I'm pleased that I think we've attained some significant improvements to this this project, and I'm happy to see that happen. But I can't support the motion, and no one will be surprised as to why I can't support the motion, and it goes to the Kit Fox mitigation requirements. It's good news that we have a Fresno office and we're going to have more participation from Department of Fish and Game, but until we actually have either a mitigation bank up and running or our fees realistically reflect the cost of purchasing Kit Fox habitat as mitigation, we simply aren't mitigating for impacts to Kit Fox habitat as we're required to do under CEQA and the Endangered Species Act. So, while I really want to underscore, I think we have improved the project, I just don't think we meet that critical test under CEQA, so I can't support the motion.
All right. Any other comments? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Milskow?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
No.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. All right. Will the secretary please introduce item number 3?
Item 3 is a continued hearing to consider a request by Hart Hill Vineyard for a conditional use permit. It is located west of the community of Templeton. County file number DRC 2004-00275. Karen Nall is a project manager.
Before we start the staff report, I'd just like to get a sense from the commissioners. This item is, the request is to continue the item till April 12th. However, we've advertised it. We will take public testimony. It is 11:45. Do we want? We have then the staff report, and at the conclusion of the staff report, we will take our lunch break until 1:30. Staff?
Maybe I should, because we've had some confusion in the past, maybe I should take the initiative to introduce staff on this project. The project manager is Karen Nall, senior planner, and we also are using the assistance of a consultant, Shauna Scott, from Morrow Group, under contract directly to us to work on this project. And Shauna has made the primary presentation last time and will make additional remarks today. I don't know if Karen has anything else to add, but I want to make it clear that this is a planning department staff team, including a consultant hired directly by us.
Okay. Good morning. Shauna Scott, Morrow Group, on behalf of county planning staff. This is a continued hearing for the Niner Wine Estates conditional use permit. To give a quick background of this project, the mitigative negative declaration was issued initially on November 9th, 2006. A request for review was received on November 22nd, 2006. The applicant submitted supplemental information to clarify and provide additional information regarding noise and groundwater. A Planning Commission hearing was held on January 11, 2007. A motion passed to further address a berm concept proposed by the applicant and to have staff assess visual and drainage impacts of the berm concept. And a motion was passed to continue the hearing to today, March 8, 2007. The applicant has submitted a berming and landscape plan and has also submitted additional studies, including an addendum to the preliminary drainage plan and a supplemental visual impact report. The mitigated negative declaration was revised and recirculated on March 1st, 2007. It is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission receive and review the revised plans, the additional studies, the revised initial study, mitigated negative declaration, and continue the item to April 12th, 2007. This concludes staff's presentation.
Are there questions of staff?
Did staff want to go over what the impacts, the visual and drainage impacts of the berms might be?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going.
I can provide additional information.
It would be nice. Somebody gave me all these colored pictures today.
First of all, one of the revised project components, the applicant has submitted a reduction in the annual events to 18 annual events, including one event with up to 300 guests, three events with up to 200 guests, four events with 100 guests, and 10 events with 75 guests. And they plan to use amplified music from 10 to 5. The revised preliminary grading plan includes four earthen berms with a maximum height of 6 feet. The berms have varying heights and varying lengths from 220 to 600 feet and varying widths of 40 to 150 feet. This is the applicant's submitted plan showing the four berms. The applicant also submitted a revised preliminary landscape plan, including layers of landscape screening between the proposed production winery and Anderson Road. The berming would provide additional height to the proposed landscaping.
Could you go back to the previous slide for a moment?
Sure.
There was a variety of heights of the berms.
Mm-hmm.
So could you indicate which berms are which height?
You can actually see it in the information that you probably have right here. Which were the handouts that we...
Today's handouts?
Uh-huh.
For the purposes of the public as well?
Well, maybe the applicant will be presenting them. I'm not sure. I think the question was of staff.
I don't have time to read handouts that I get on the day of the hearing. If staff could just indicate which berms are which height, I think it would be helpful.
Use the mouse. This berm here is 6 feet.
This one looks like it's six.
This berm is the maximum height is 6 feet.
The closest to the road is four.
The one closest to the road here is approximately 4 feet. And
I can't read it.
Oh. And this berm here is approximately 5 feet tall.
Thank you.
Staff wish to offer any more information about the berms, or the commission have additional questions?
That's the basic information about the berm. In addition to the berming plan, the applicant is proposing this landscape plan. And this detail shows the proposed berming and landscape plan sections.
That was in our packet.
Uphill, so to speak.
Correct. The preliminary drainage plan also proposes to redirect stormwater approximately 100 feet to the north. And this slide shows, maybe it makes it more clear, there's a natural drainage pattern that would flow through the sedimentation area and continue through the site right here in the historic pattern. There's also the natural drainage currently over here flows where the dashed blue line is and converges with this drainage pattern on the neighbor's property. The applicant proposes to, with the construction of this berm, redirect the stormwater around this berm to converge with the other natural drainage approximately right here. The applicant submitted an addendum to the preliminary drainage plan, and the addendum report identified that implementation of the proposed revised plans would not result in increased stormwater flows. The applicant also submitted a supplemental visual impact report that identified that the variable heights, widths, and undulation of the berms would minimize the engineered appearance of the earthen berms. The berms would not appear out of scale. Initially, the berms would provide varying degrees of screening, which would vary from different points on Anderson Road to providing no screening to screening approximately half of the building, and that's without landscaping. After 5 years, the berming and the landscape plan would nearly fully screen structures from public view from Anderson Road. I've included some photo simulations of the project as seen from Anderson Road. The top view is the existing view. The middle view is a photo simulation of the proposed project approximately 6 months after construction of the building, the berms, and initial planting of landscaping. And the bottom shows the landscape plan approximately 5 years. This is a second photo simulation from a different vantage point on Anderson Road. A third photo simulation. And this fourth photo simulation shows the project as seen from Highway 46.
I thought I could see that the mega winery from the 46, but looks like I do there. What's that building sort of in the center?
This building is a winery on an adjacent property.
Okay.
And then the proposed Niner Wine Estates project is located right here.
Okay. Did you address the additional landscaping is going to require a bit of water? So, and we've heard previous testimony, water is an issue here. So is that going to upset that water balance now? Or?
Well, the applicant proposes to use the water from the wastewater treatment pond to irrigate the landscaping.
But
the applicant,
that sounds good, but still, I mean, the water, if we didn't have all that landscaping, the water would go in this wastewater treatment pond, and then it would percolate down into the groundwater, and then they would reuse it next year or something like that, right?
Right.
Now we're going to put some landscaping on, and now we've got evapotranspiration, so now we've lost it forever.
And the applicant's water consultant is available to answer questions about water.
Does that complete your presentation?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions? Not hearing any at this point. We will adjourn for lunch and return at 1:30.